And welcome to the Glacially Musical Podcast, a ghost cult edible podcast. It's beer, metal, and swearing. Of course, I am Nick Cameron of Glacially Musical, joined by my good friend, a guy that's always on time. That's not right. A man that's always... Oh, shoot. I had a great nickname, but I have not thought up the lead up. Keefe Quality Assurance.
I'm a big fan of Quality Assurance. You should know that.
I am also a big fan of quality assurance. However, this would fail the quality. My intro fails the quality check. I apologize.
On occasion, not always. Just today.
Okay. I'm just saying today. I'm like Sony, man. You know, Sony back in the 90s when they made televisions, you know, it was Sony versus Zenith. Anybody remember Zenith? Because I am old. The kid said to me today that I needed to use this new slang word, GAT. Yet, I don't know. And I'm like, look, I'm old, I'm not doing that. I'm gonna talk the way I do. So in 1985 or 89 or something, Zenith Televisions, an American company, had like 2,000 televisions fail out of the factory. Sony had three. Three.
Kaizen works as a brand style, gotta tell you.
I don't know what that means. Moving forward. Okay. Thank you for joining us this week. If it is your first time, this is the first episode of the Queen series. We're going to be extraordinarily objective. I am going to switch to Mushmouth from Fat Albert. I apologize for that. We're going to be extraordinarily objective and not gush ropes of Canadian whiskey all over this stuff. But we probably will. Or Guinness. I mean, look, it's English time, and I even got my English mug out. I got my English mug. So
I think we're going to pace ourselves, right? Because this record, the first Queen record's good.
Whoa. Spoilers.
No, we said what it was. Everybody knows.
No, but you can't start rating the record before we even get
there. I'm not rating anything. I'm just saying, like, we know that the later records are better.
Well, yeah, I mean,
knows that. If you don't know,
spoiler alert,
into...
this record is very different than everything that comes after it.
Yes.
In fact, I had, I'm going to save that story. So here's how we do this. We do a greeting, beer check, vinyl check, news check, shirt check, beer, vinyl, news, shirt. We discussed this off air and I still have screwed it up.
Still wrong. It's okay.
I am excited and my pants are tight in all the best ways. Also, I have lost enough weight that I can wear my super tight pants. So I'm feeling like extra sexy. So I'm up to like a 3.5 now out of 10.
Are you Jonah Hill in?
Whoa! New. He is problematic as hell.
I know he was canceled, but I'm saying, are you Jonah Hill in Superbad, where he's like, if I wear pants like a size too small, you can see the camel tail.
There's a pair of Levi's I have that they put the wrong size on them. The only Levi's I've ever had in my whole life that got the wrong size. They're like 34s, but the label says 36, which is what I've been wearing. But all my 36s are now like an inch too big. So I can squeeze into these and they don't fall down. It's awesome. Anyway, so my beer of the week. I believe I've had this on the podcast before. Excuse me, I am burpy. When we record this, I come right after dinner. So my beer of the week is Lagunitas IPA, a 6.2 ABV hoppy Munafuna from California, where the girls are the best, I hear. Finger fudge pour in my English pint glass. I don't know what the deal with these little chunky diggies are, but that's what it is.
All right. He's going the whole beer in. That's what he's doing. The whole beer is going.
I waited
in.
It out.
You did. All right. It's time for my non-beer check. I'm having yet again another liquid death squeeze to death.
Murder your thirst,
and I'm going to drink it and pour it this time into a glass, into my glacially musical poured glass. Only three of a kind, or four of a kind.
Two.
There's not a third. The kid didn't even get one for her labor.
Well, I mean, she's the one that made it. She could have kept it. You drank without the cheers, sir.
Oh, I'm a shithead. I'm very thirsty. I just did, like, again, a big live stream right before this.
Always good to see you. One of my favorite hours of the week, like top two at least. Unless it's, you know, a good week marriage-wise. But a friend of mine on Saturday was over to watch the Battlehawks football match. And she said the greatest thing about IPA. She's like, I'm not a big fan of IPAs because I drink them and they make me thirsty. I'm like, you know what, Michelle? You kind of nailed that one.
Facts.
But moving on into my vinyl check. I got a twofer this week. First one is a Department of Metal Antiquities recent subject. Izzy Stradlin and the Juju Hounds. I heard of this band while watching Beavis and Butthead. And, you know, of course, it's Beavis and Butthead. And later episodes, you couldn't really hear the music. You could only just hear them talking. So I didn't really hear what it sounded like. I remember we bought it on CD, and I don't remember it. But so we did end up doing an episode on it. Obviously, it is a spin it, because I got it. This is a 90s pressing. This is not a modern pressing. I got this from England. Did a Dunkin' package, which my Dunkin' packages are some of my absolute favorite record purchases every year. I do about one a year. I save up five or six. This time, though, I actually had a problem filling it, so a lawyer wife had to help me fill it. But the other record is another one that should be on the Department of Metal Antiquities. This is Death Piggy, which is the band Dave Brocky of Gwar was in before Gwar was formed, once he found the Slave Pit people. And this was a Record Store Day release from a few years ago. It is a pretty sweet golden record. It's not like... it does have I hit the springs. It's got an etching which you can't... Damn it. I'm sorry, I'm still getting used to the zero G arm of the microphone. Anyway, so that is that. That was a Record Store Day release. The Death Piggy I got for $20 at the Record Space, which is on Gravois and Afton. And the Izzy Stradlin record I got off Discogs, and I don't remember what it cost because I also had to pay to ship it to Duncan's house and then to pay to ship it to my house, probably around $20, $25. That's one of the great things about ordering them in England. If you can find somebody to be your bouncy buddy, you save a lot of money that way on the shipping.
Three fun facts. Izzy Stradlin's birthday was yesterday. 2 weeks ago was Dave Brocky's 10th anniversary of his passing. As you know, I have Death Piggy already.
And I did not. I didn't have it before we started our Gwar series, and yeah. I totally regret that.
My Death Piggy was a... Yeah, I got it from a Record Store Day like 2-3 years ago.
I remember seeing it in Edwardsville. I want to say 21. It was 21 when I saw it, and I went, oh, Dave Brocky from Gwar. Why would I want this? The guy that buys all the side projects and other stuff of A-list bands. You know, why would that guy buy this thing?
Fair enough. And time for my vinyl check. I have just the one. And this is, I think I've checked this on Ghost Cult's Weekly Ritual, but not on our show. And this is a possible future, spoiler alert, future possible podcast subject for Glacially Musical, Royal Thunder's recent album.
Oh, I didn't know they put out a new one.
Rebuilding the Mountain came out in last year from Spine Farm Records. They then opened for Alice in Chains on a big tour. So a lot of people discovered their awesomeness. This is really a band, if there was justice in the world, they would be like hella popular. They're so good.
They should be headlining like 5,000 seaters. They are amazing. I reviewed their very first record back when Glacially Musical as a review site was just me buying CDs and reviewing them. Because I saw them in Guitar World and I'm like, oh, doom metal, Kyessa? I'll check this out.
I love Kyessa. That's one of my favorite bands. Apparently the co-front person of Kyessa, Laura Pleasance, is about to announce a solo album that has been in the works for a long time. Just really quick, this was $30 at the show in Reno. When I shot a man in Reno. Look at this distinctive artwork that kind of looks like the artwork from Metropolis, the film.
Very different for them.
Yeah, very different, right? And then here's this inner sleeve with lyrics, the inner gatefold. It is only a single, but it is a double gatefold. I know that disappoints you. Did come in the Mylar, paper only, so I have yet to put it in a proper Mylar. But look at this beautiful limited vinyl. They're like, you could have the black or the white. I was like, I think I want the fun cream one. And then just to be, after they played, they hung out and autographed about 500 autographs for kids, especially little girls, because Melanie, their singer, is incredible and someone to be looked up to. And I waited back for them to watch them sign all these autographs and take pictures and hugs and give out guitar picks. That's how you do it. That's how you make fans. And then I hung out with them for a few minutes and I was like, I could have them autograph it for free because we're friends. I think we're friendly. At least there's been a lot of love and support there in the past. But I was like, I'm going to let them go and not hound them for a signature. But I easily could have got one, you know?
And when she, because she plays bass and sings, and she writes her bass parts before writing her vocal melodies. And she has to relearn the songs in order to be able to play and sing them. And I think that is so badass and so... just, you know what, I'm going to do the best I can on both parts, and I'm going to make this work in concert somehow. And that is how you do it, kids. That's how you do it. And absolutely, you stay around. You know, I love John 5. John 5 charges you $30 for a Polaroid. That's not how you do it. And, but yes, I absolutely agree. In any justice in this world, and Royal Thunder is more popular than Coheed and Cambria. Because they're better than Coheed and Cambria and around the same kind of age range.
Yeah, I mean, they're, I think, maybe a little behind those guys. But I hear what you're saying. I would like to just see them get their... they're on Spine Farm, which is as close to a major as you can be without being on one as a metal label and a rock and metal label. They don't do a lot of festivals. They did a bunch of years. They put out two very acclaimed records back-to-back. Crooked Doors is actually my favorite record by them. It's a heartbreaking record about the
breakup. That is the one I have on vinyl. It's
the breakup of Melanie and Josh, actually, is the subject matter of the whole record. It's just like, kill me now, especially with what I'm going through personally. But, like, I cannot listen to that right now. But anyway, that's my 1-4. We will eventually do Royal Thunder. It's a foregone conclusion. It's just when.
Yeah, I mean, there's really no question. I'm also going to throw out, it occurred to me today, we should do Metallica again for the 80s.
Redo it?
No, we did the 90s.
We did them all, didn't we?
No, we did the 90s only. Black Album shit. Forward.
Why didn't we think of that?
Because this wasn't a podcast yet. It was you guesting on the thing I did, and then we were like, oh, shit, you know what we should do? Let's do a series.
Right, and then it was like, oh, you stay now. You're part of
this. It's like, okay, this is fun. Let's now do Iron Maiden.
I'm very lucky that anybody, in a world of where I have a ton of abandonment issues and mental problems, the fact that anybody wants to keep me around for anything is uplifting when other people leave.
Oh, I'm totally with you. That is, you know, that's Nick to a T. I went to 14 different schools before 7th grade.
Yeah, it's rough.
So being able to let go of the past is easy and hard at the same time. News check, because we're doing this in order. I got one bit of news this week. It was announced last night that Aerosmith has rescheduled the Peace Out Tour. And on a personal note, I bought tickets to the Peace Out rescheduled tour this morning. So, also, Heart has announced a second leg. I don't think we talked about this last week, but Heart has announced a second leg of the Royal Flush Tour. So, related, I also have tickets to the Heart Royal Flush Tour. With that one, like the tour with Def Leppard and Journey, has rotating openers. So the rotating openers are Cheap Trick, Jason Bonham, Led Zeppelin Evening, and somebody I don't care to remember, apparently. And I am seeing Jason Bonham's Led Zeppelin Experience. I am excited for that because I have never seen it. Or Led Zeppelin Evening. It's Led Zeppelin Evening. He had to change the name. And this will be, I will be seeing Jason Bonham twice this year because I will be seeing him with Sammy Hagar's. Actually, it's technically Chickenfoot because it's not Chickenfoot because Chad Smith is in Chickenfoot.
Also, isn't the guitar player different or is Satch in Chickenfoot?
It's Satch.
It's not the other guy who used to be in the...
No, it's all Satch. Satch is Chickenfoot.
Okay.
So I'll be seeing...
You know what? You know how much I care about Sammy Hagar? Zero. So...
You know what, Keefe? Eat your own butt, okay? Step on your dick.
If I could, I would, but I can't.
I do all the time. It's because it hurts. It hurts my soul. Anyway,
I was not ready for that. Oh my God.
So I'm excited to see Sammy Hagar. So eat your own butt. You're going to hear about it. You're going to get a full show review when that happens. And you know what you're just going to have to do? You're going to have to smile and nod. But the good news is, last bit of news, and I will turn it over to Keithy for whatever he's got. Next week, or Friday, this Friday begins Nick's Concert Summer, which goes into October as of right now. We have 17 shows that we have tickets to between Friday and the end of October. So a lot of cool nights, a lot of cool steak dinners. I get a steak dinner before this week's show.
Nice work. I'm a
fancy
fan
steak dinner.
As I pour a little more Liquid Death into my poured glass. There's many, many things to bust out about in the news. I want to bring people's attention to former podcast subject Black Sabbath is putting out not a new song, but they're putting out a music video this week for a session they did in 2017 with Iommi, Geezer, and Ozzy. And they're doing a new version of Tomorrow's Dream with a live video and a live recording. I don't know if this is to announce something, but...
I don't need that, but...
I mean, if Ozzy's in, like, the decent form that he showed the last couple of years, it might be good. Tomorrow's Dream is a difficult song to sing. It's a difficult song to sing, so I imagine 65-year-old Ozzy is going to have a hard time with it. But we'll see. I'm hopeful. Maybe it's cool.
Did we announce Anno Domini?
We talked briefly about it. You had it as a news item. We should talk more about it in a future week. Two other quick pieces of news. This is pretty terrible. The infamous record store in Oslo, Norway, where the original Norwegian black metal scene was born and formed, formerly called Helvete, but has been called Nesseblad for a long time, burned down last night. Holy shit. I know that's a lot of people are like, irony, they burned churches and now their store burned. It's not the same people that own it. Obviously, Euronymous is long dead. Faust and Varg are not involved, obviously. It's a new couple that took over the space, kept the record store going, kept the basement alive, if you saw the Lords of Chaos movie, all that stuff is in there. They filmed
it. Was it the Eclipse that did it?
No. It was just something they don't know. The whole block of stores burned down. So I don't think it was the record store that probably had an electrical fire and burned the block down. It was the block of stores burned down. So very sad. There is a GoFundMe. Maybe we'll link it in the description. I broke the news basically to the whole world. It was sent to me by a ghost cultist in Europe. And this site is in Norwegian, but basically their store burned down. Translated and make a news piece. And I'm like at 4 a.m. gonna faint, but I did it. And then, semi-related to a former Glacially Musical podcast guest, Megaran, Nerdcore King, has guested on a new track by the Epic Levels. I don't know if you know Epic Levels, they're Nerdcore rappers. They also have a podcast that's very popular about Dungeons & Dragons, and they put out a new single that Ghost Cult premiered because they liked our coverage of Megaran between Ghost Cult and Glacially so much. He was like, would you like to premiere this? I don't really like it. And by the way, the publicist is one of the rappers and guys in the podcast. So maybe we should have him on at some point. So it is Mega Dungeon Men is the name of the track, featuring Megaran, MC Frontalot, Denkles, and Dizzy the Bard. I'm sure you know who some of those people are.
I am familiar with this crop of people.
And their podcast is called the Mad Dungeon Podcast. If you're like nerdcore and fantasy and gaming and D&D and 20-sided die, this is your life. And I wrote a pretty great – this is the quote that I wrote for the premiere on our website. Because a lot of times I'll just copy the press release. I used to write like a unique post and social media post for everything, and I can't anymore. No more bandwidth. The brain is running out of space.
When anybody sees the amount of email that people like us get, it's just being beaten down daily.
I spent many a podcast in the past, not ours, on music industry podcasts, my own and others, berating everybody else for not. Why do you cut and paste a press release? The laziest thing. No, you have to. You can't get anything done if you don't. I can't anymore. This is what I wrote. Mega Dungeon Men, the track, is a clarion call to nerds, dungeon masters, Lord of the Rings fans, with enough rhymes to fill a shield helicarrier. This is easily one of the finest sentences I have written this year, and I just want to take a second and slow clap myself.
You could slow stroke yourself, too, if you want. I'm fine with it.
Do that
just
tomorrow.
Just do it while I'm talking.
Did you just put a hat on?
Yeah, I did put a hat on. I'm like, my hair has been...
Got to shave it off, bro. Go bald. It's time.
I'm getting there. I'm actually thinking about the Rogaine, and I'm like, how vain am I? Am I that vain? I might be. I don't know.
Before you do the Rogaine, go bald, shave your head, and try it on for like 8 weeks. I'm telling you, you're going to love it.
No.
You're going to love it. You're very handsome.
No.
News check over, shirt check time. Go.
Friend of the show, 20-watt tombstone.
Did I wear mine last week?
Maybe. I don't know.
I think I had mine last week.
That was last week, and I drank way too much on Saturday. I told you all about it.
Yeah, you said this. I'm wearing my X-Files I Want to Believe shirt, but I'm pretty sure I've worn this at least like twice in the last 3 weeks across all my interviews and shows. So sorry, yeah. I'm very depressed right now, and this is my wardrobe is this flannel, this shirt, and some form of pajamas and at least clean underwear, but nothing else clean.
Yeah, fuck that show.
Hey, that's my favorite show ever. What do you mean? Fuck
really?
Yeah, they're making a remake. Ryan Coogler, who did Creed and Black Panther, is remaking a new version of the X-Files. Come on, bro.
Have we done all our departments?
We have. It's time for the meat of the episode.
All right, because I'm not fighting over this. The meat of the episode today is a delightful, not spicy marinara sauce, which I cooked today, and I made the best homemade tomato sauce of my life. Realized finally that while I make baked spaghetti for my family, I can hold back some of the meat sauce and not have baked spaghetti myself. I am a moron sometimes. But let's turn the Wayback Machine. We're going to go back to Queen, the beginnings of Queen. We're going to check in on a young gentleman named Farouk. Farouk, you would probably think is not a white man, but here we are. He is white as the day is long. And he's got Prince Valiant hair later. The princiest Prince Valiant hair. You could put a...
Officially, he is not... He's white looking. He is not white.
Really?
He's actually... His family were... Muslims. He was a Zoroastrian parson. Look it up. Monotheistic religion, one of the first on the planet. And he is from
Algeria, I believe.
Zanzibar or Mozambique. And he is absolutely an Arab person and not a white person. But he just looked white. He had pasty skin. Maybe he was the first goth dandy of the 70s.
You're right. Zanzibar, the Sultanate of Zanzibar. Well, there are... like Jordanians that are as white as I am. So it's, you know, that name does not make, his last name, his full name, Farouk Balsara. And eventually he finds himself in England, and he has got a set of pipes on him like Chris Cornell wishes he had. And I don't mean that to denigrate Chris Cornell, because Chris Cornell was an amazing singer. But that's just, Freddie Mercury was a... force, a phenomenon, an amazing thing.
He was a unbelievable, like in sports, we talk about five tool guys. He was a five tool guy as a musician, and he had no formal training. He didn't read music. He was never trained. He never got voice lessons. He just learned. His ear was probably like some mutant superpower Professor X shit. And people will come to me, and for a long time, I was like, Led Zeppelin, Led Zeppelin, Led Zeppelin. Nobody could touch them. They're so untouchable. If you want to say that Freddie is the best singer ever in rock, I won't fight you. And to an extent, they had a longer career, so it's not apples to apples. But over a similar amount of time, you can put Queen's best stuff up against Zeppelin or anybody. And if there are people who believe Queen is the best band ever, and I will not fight them anymore.
I will say this and simply this. When it comes to Queen versus Zeppelin, one of these two bands is much better at crafting albums than the other one. And I think we can all guess that was Led Zeppelin, because Led Zeppelin was the best at albums. Nobody could craft an album like those guys. Anyway, so, you know, they're formed in 1970. They kind of kick around. I mean, think about 1970 in England. 1970 is a weird time that, you know, the hippie era is dying. The English blues is essentially over. Of course, you have Led Zeppelin. You have, you know, Deep Purple is still a little bluesy at this point, but it's not English blues anymore. English blues has died. Acid rock is coming and going. The folk music phenomenon has come and gone. We are now heading on headlong. Get it? Headlong? Headlong on into prog rock. And I don't know that I would never personally refer to Queen as prog, but they get a little proggy here and there. Every now and again, they gotta, like, you know, oh God, what was the, there's a song on Night at the Opera, which we're gonna get to next week, maybe week after. No, Queen 2. I forgot about Queen 2. Oh, wow, they put out a bunch of records at the beginning. I didn't know that. So, me walking into this, I am a casual Queen fan. I am a greatest hits level fan. I legitimately forgot that I have this album on vinyl. I bought Queen and a Queen and Night at the Opera at the Circa Now Records on South Grand Avenue by my old house. Bought them both on the same day. I had totally forgotten. So Queen arrives in 1973. In 1973, the first album comes out. Led Zeppelin is, for all intents and purposes, over at this point. It's not long after, you know, this is 1973 is Led Zeppelin Houses of the Holy. Black Sabbath is up to volume 4. Deep Purple has passed Machine Head. That old guard from the 60s, all of those bands that started in the 60s have now fallen off. And it's time for somebody else to rise. And the music changes. And enter Queen, 1973.
I think there's some very interesting things. I think Queen meant to be a prog band, but Freddie was so good and so like flexible and limitless as a vocalist and a performer that it enabled the band to go in other directions they probably would never have gone in if they had I'm sorry to say, a Paul Rodgers, an average singer. He's average. He's a little bit of a little above average to me.
Average. Wow.
I agree with you on what you set up there, and I'm gonna throw in a couple of other bands that have probably already peaked. Moody Blues already peaked. King Crimson had lineup problems, so their records are all consistently great, but like they lost fans because the sound of the band changed constantly. So it was hard for them. ELP, basically contemporaries of Queen, and I feel like there's a little bit of a thread from ELP, King Crimson, Moody Blues, and Queen. This grandiose, real learned musicians, Brian May, Roger Taylor, real learned, like understanding of how music works, the vision to do opera, the not make, you know, the vision to, you know, obviously science fiction and fantasy was who they were. A lot of robes and
Flash.
I love Flash. We have I don't think we're gonna do it, but I almost
You
want
know what we're
to.
doing? No, we're gonna jump. We're gonna jump because I want to. We're
This
gonna
series
stop
will
where we
never end.
No, we're gonna stop where we stop.
All right.
And then we're gonna jump. You know what? It could be a chaser.
It
It
could
could
be
be a
a chance.
good chaser because we could do an
I'm
episode
I want to do the
on
movie
that.
though. I want to watch the movie in real time.
Oh, you know what? You know what we could do? We could do the Pink Floyd series where we did Animals, three different ones.
Oh yeah, that's cool. We could
We
do
could do
that.
Flash Gordon, two different ones.
But anyway, yeah,
real quick.
I'm gonna let you go back and
Yeah.
finish and.
Want to also point out that the American Vanguard, the previous American Vanguard had also fallen off. Janis Joplin's gone, Jim Morrison's gone, Jimi Hendrix is gone. These are the three leading artists. Jefferson Airplane has become Starship. I mean, everything has fallen apart. It's weird how this always happens. In popular music, all of a sudden, everything that was is no longer. And it's not just like, it's like how punk rock died in 1980 in England, and it died in 1983 in America. And, you know, Dungeons and Dragons heavy metal in America dies in 1986, replaced by hair metal and replaced by thrash metal. Well, no, hair metal, Dungeons and Dragons, thrash.
I disagree about the punk in America, but okay, I'll let you
You can
argue
disagree
it
all you
another
want, and
time.
that's fine.
Argue another time.
That's fine. So Queen, emerges in this new vanguard. I completely agree. Learned musicians playing music in a rock style, unafraid to take in all their influences. Freddie Mercury, LGBTQ, probably, you know, he is not ashamed to bring in those influences. I've always wondered if Queen was a reference. I don't know. Not going to say it is.
He definitely was not out, if you know his life story a little bit. He was not out, but he was obviously very flamboyant, and apparently the band knew the whole way that he was, had different allegiances.
Well, and Boy George wasn't out either.
Well, but Boy George was, like, openly trans and, you know, like, makeup and dresses and women's clothes publicly. He was definitely out. He didn't officially say I'm whatever, but he was living out loud. He was living the life out loud. Freddie had issues between his, just like the band's image and management of them was like, you have to be like, you're gorgeous. You have to be like a Lothario. You can't be, a ponce, as they say in England. It's probably derogatory to say that. But anyway.
and then he wears capes. And unitards cut down to his navel.
You cannot nonce around. Well, nobody wore women's pants better than Freddie Mercury ever, actually.
Or tights. Very, but, very, very sexy tights.
But, yeah, I think there is a subtext. We can talk about this at the end. I think of the series would be a good time to talk about that whole community of artists and what Freddie did at the end of his life to cement his legacy for the rest of eternity about this band. But I think we all kind of felt like, oh, he's very effeminate. And again, progressive rock guys, a lot of capes, a lot of blousy outfits, you know.
Rick Wakeman still wears a cape.
He still wears a cape, my man. And Alan Parsons.
You know what? I envy that. Because I capes never made any sense to me until I realized, oh, it's a coat without arms. You just wrap it. And I'm like, wow.
If you were you a fan of Kvelertak, the Norwegian boogie rock band?
No, but I'm interested.
They had like black metal influences, but they also sounded like Thin Lizzy or ZZ Top a little bit sometimes. And so their lead singer quit. They got a new one. And the original lead singer has a new persona and a new music. Sounds like the old band, but it's solo. And he wears basically like a cape with a little band across his chest.
Oh, like an elven clasp?
Bro, he looks like Dr. Jekyll. And he sounds like Mr. Hyde, and he is amazing. Anyway.
Okay, I have I'm I want to know more about
back,
that.
Back to the today. Lecture at hand. Back to the
lecture at hand. So, Queen finds themselves in the middle of a power vacuum, and Queen fully realizes it the right time, and they jump straight into that vacuum, and they stick their arms out and go, "What about us?"
Fair enough. I'm going to say that I think, again, like, you know, so they came from two different bands. Basically, Freddie had his own band, Ibex, named for the wildebeest. And Roger and Brian had met. I think Roger was in dental school. Brian was in art school. Like many of the classic rock era people were artists first before musicians. And they had a band called Smile that had like local following. Some of the Smile material ends up on Queen 1 and influencing later Queen albums a little bit. But clearly they were having problems with the lead singer's disease, and in comes Freddie, who was already a fan of the band and used to just pop up at their gigs. And then they were like, yeah, we're thinking of binning our vocalist. Do you now? And he showed up at the first rehearsal, like, just dressed outlandishly because he was into fashion. Him and his girlfriend were art students. He had a girlfriend at the time. As you know, she is the muse of a lot of early Queen music, is Freddie Mercury's muse, his best friend, and who ended up inheriting his estate, basically, at the end of his life. And they sort of take one song from Smile that was the best popular one, and they start playing gigs in 1970. And they don't actually get signed to EMI, I believe, until late 72, and record and release their album in 73.
The album was recorded in 70. Oh, no, the demos were recorded in 71. The album itself was recorded in April to July of 72.
No, maybe. We don't have, maybe. Yeah, that's right. That's right. But then didn't come out for a whole year, basically, which is weird. But maybe they were like waiting for the right time. That is a whole year. a whole year to sit on a record. Don't know why, but
you know what? But they sat on it till the right time.
Yeah, for sure. And I'm gonna say, like, I'm sure the we don't really know what the proto Queen sounded like. We have an idea, right? When you listen to Queen One, and what I'm gonna say is, some bands don't know what they have when they start out. They have to find themselves. Like, we've talked a lot in these series about bands growing into themselves. Slayer became Slayer at Reign and Blood. They were always Slayer. They were Slayer from the first couple of albums, a whole genre defined and held in a handful of songs that are okay with bad production. But Queen maybe knows who they are already, and they're just not there yet as writers and song crafters. And recording techniques are not there to get out what's in these guys' heads. So these
I will say completely that the first track on this record is a fully formed Queen song.
And, oh, it's my favorite. It's like still one of my second. It's like a second favorite Queen song ever. Already.
Fair enough. I mean, to the point where when I realized that I was listening to that song on the first record, I'm like, really? That's on their first album. Metallica had, you know, because we can't not mention Metallica. They did not do a Metallica song until, like, a proper one to, like, the third record. Maybe second. But nothing on the first.
I think Ride the Lightning. Yeah, like, Kill 'Em All. Kill 'Em All is just Diamond Head and Motorhead Worship. Bands with the name Head in it. And then Ride the Lightning is really thrash and really becomes its own original thing, except for Escape and the couple of riffs they lifted from other bands. And then Master is completely original and unbelievable. I don't know if you have any more discussion about Queen.
Just one thing I wanted to throw out before we get into the track by track. Brian May has only ever owned a single guitar. The guitar that you picture that Brian May plays, him and his dad made when he was a kid.
Yes, he could not afford a guitar for his son, so they had a home, and they pulled a piece of wood off of the mantelpiece of the fireplace that heated the whole home, because that's your Midlands, which is where Brian May was originally from. Now he's a Londoner. Brian May is a treasure. We're going to say that over and over in this series.
Dr. Brian May.
Is he Sir Brian May? He might be Sir Brian
May. He is Sir Dr. Brian May.
Sir Dr. We'll have to confirm that. I'm not 100% sure. But yeah, his dad made him that guitar. Figured out, yeah, he's Sir Brian Harold May, and he has the CBE designation.
He's got a CBE, that's a big deal.
Chill out.
It actually really is. I'm not being a weirdo. That's okay. The CBE, OBE. Those are big deals.
Humongous designations. Only a few dozens of people have them. As in terms of arts,
CBE is. Hang on, it is. Wait, I'm looking at the wrong thing here. Never mind. It really is a big deal.
We'll have it for next week. We'll be more prepared. Before I get into the track by track, yeah, Brian's dad makes him that guitar. They get John Deacon, who is the unsung hero of the band. He's never talked about. Roger Taylor, in addition to being one of the greatest drummers ever, he probably could have been the lead singer of his own band and never played a drum. That's how good a singer he is by himself. He is on par with Freddie at times. And they let him take a lot of leads and high harmonies because he's got an astounding voice. To this day, still a gem. So let's get into track by track, unless you have anything else.
Last thing. CBE is Commander of the British Empire.
Wow.
Which is just below Order of the British Empire. Which is just below knighthood, so he may not be Sir Brian May, but
no, he's definitely Sir Brian May. He's definitely knighted.
So he's been recognized by the crown,
and good as well for as him. He also has a PhD in astro frickin' physics, bro.
So he is Dr. Sir Brian May, CBE.
God,
does he have
guitar.
A bronze silver certificate, or bronze swimming certificate, and a silver swimming certificate?
Send him a Stanley Cup. Send him a Lombardi Trophy. Are you ready for the track by track?
I am ready.
The next song is called Keep Yourself a Night. Keep Yourself Alive. Thank you. Good night. Like, literally, right off the bat, a 10 of 10 song to start their career. Now, obviously, like, you know, they had some of these songs before, but, like, wow. Like, almost proto heavy metal. Literally, I hear Iron Maiden when I hear this song. If you put Bruce on this, it's Maiden with heavier guitar. You just add a heavier guitar, another track of guitar, and Bruce. It's Maiden. This is the template for every, you know, the only thing I could think of that came out around the same time as this that has some of the Sabbath stuff on Master of Reality and Volume 4, and like Immigrant Song, which is already 3 years before this. Holy shit, bro.
Yeah, this song is truly amazing. When you think Keep Yourself Alive, you know, Freddie Mercury sings it and it's happy-go-lucky and yay, we're having a great time. Keep yourself alive and have fun. When you say Bruce Dickinson, boom, he can take the exact same words, put his spin, make it heavy, and now we have serious metal with the exact same words. And that's amazing. You know, this is absolutely one of the best songs, probably the best song recorded in 1973.
It's arguable. And by the way, there's like a shocking levels of incredible harmony vocals on here for a debuting album band. And maybe one other thing that doesn't get talked about enough, and I'm just going to, you know, I always come in here. One of the things that Queen, that's most beside Freddie's endearing voice, is that his lyrics are very relatable. And there's a big thread of depression and sadness and like their background in poverty. Freddie's struggles as an immigrant growing up in England. They're in songs. Like, Keep Yourself Alive is literally, I never saw my face in a shop in alleyway. Like, he's talking about, like, how they had nothing. They came from nothing. And that his indomitable spirit is what kept him going. He knew he was born to be a star. He wasn't born to be a singer. He was born to be a star. He wasn't a practiced musician. Luckily, the other three guys were. But he inherently understood the musical language like most people do the written word.
Correct. Absolutely agree.
So now, here's the second track, which is unfortunately a bit of a step down. But it was a well-known song for them regionally. Doing All Right, I think it was previously called Everything's Fine or Everything's Nice. That's a song that they co-wrote with the band had written before they knew Freddie, with Tim Staffel from the band Smile. Beautiful, mellifluous, kind of reminds me of Yes, a little bit of some of the John Anderson folksy Yes songs that are a little hippy-dippy. Not like a stellar song, but like it's good.
It's good enough. Everything is going to be a step down after the previous song. It's fine. You know, this is a early 70s pop rock song. Nobody really needs it, but you need to have a record.
By the way, I know we've been told many times not to trust Wikipedia, but Wikipedia, which I'm reading off of for this track listing, credits the Keep Yourself Alive lead vocals to all three of those guys. John Deacon never sang, which is weird because usually the bass player is a guy. I was one. Bass player is a guy who usually comes in with the backing vocals, but none from him. But Mercury, Taylor, and May on the lead vocals, all for Keep Yourself Alive. That's wild. But anyway, yeah, pretty well said. It's okay. It's not even really strong. It's just okay.
It's the okayest song on the record.
It is definitely the okayest Queen song on Queen 1. The third song on the record is Great King Rat. Now, I will add that, you know, there's some... I don't want to say there's some songs together here that could have made a suite on one side, like a concept, like a very proggy, pretentious story. But there is a story that Freddie and his sister had as children that they used to tell each other as a game. And there are three or four songs across the album that have recurring themes about this game. So Great Rat King, My Fairy King are both two of them. And I think there's at least a third, Night Comes Down. And possibly Son and Daughter also. Oh, no. Seven Seas of Rye, because the fictional land is the Land of Rye. So Seven Seas of Rye, Night Comes Down, Great Rat King, My Fairy King. Sorry to jump ahead on these. They're all related somewhat. Or they were meant to be. Thoughts on Great Rat King?
I was trying to do a Silvio Dante kind of phrase, but I couldn't think of one. Sorry, I listened to the
Tone, you got to get a hold of this.
Tone, man. Okay, come on. I got some bad news. I'll tell you.
I got to go to Satrielli's and get the gabagool.
Got to get to the gabagool. I got to go to the bada bing. Got to go to the bada bing. I got to go get the money.
They almost never said bada bing after the first episode. It was always the bing.
Yeah, the bing. Correct. Anyway, Great King Rat. Here we have probably the most metal song on the record about a rat. And a lot of kingly stuff, a lot of regalness, a lot of regal rats. Brian May does not really get talked about enough as a guitar player. On this record, he really shows what a great guitar player and what a flashy guitar player he could have been had he chosen to. Great song.
Here's another interesting thing. similar to Floyd and similar to King Crimson, I'm gonna nerd out on this prog shit this series, at least early. You know, Queen comes along and all the blues rock has been done already. Like, it's all been done. Like, Deep Purple continue, they get better and better and different and different. And neoclassical and progressive rock and jazz comes in. But they're still got blues-based guitar solos, and whatever singer is singing for the band, Coverdale or Gillan, it's always some husky, dusky bluesman-inspired thing. Those guys are not trying to do operatic, crazy vocals much. And this Queen record doesn't have the typical formula of songs of verse, chorus, verse, pentatonic blues scale. Not that that's boring, but it was already done by the masters. How many more can you do? Jeff Beck became a jazz musician after this.
And what are you going to do? It's like The Simpsons, man. The Simpsons did it. Led Zeppelin did it.
Yeah.
Deep Purple, everybody did it.
So just like I thought, these are not atypical songs for this time in the world. And I think Great King Rat is excellent. I'm with you on that metal thing. It's a bit long. It's 5 minutes, 5 minutes and almost 6 minutes. A little long, but okay. Side one closes with My Fairy King, also, again, similarly related to the Land of Rye.
So I'm assuming this is also part of the Goblin King and the Labyrinth story.
Never-ending story.
No, that's a different movie.
I know, but I'm referencing it because they're all similar.
You know what, Keefe? Look at me. Look at me. Look in my eyes. Artax. You deserved it. Flip the record.
Flip the goddamn record over. Not a song by Megadeth from 1988. Liar.
I mean, could we make any more Gen X references today? Or are we there?
We're pretty Gen X-y. This is completely written by Freddie. Freddie wrote half this record, by the way. Again, had never written a song before joining Queen and had written half the debut record by himself. Complete compositions, somehow interpreted to them how to play the parts, and they credited him with the, you know, they knew what they had. Liar is pretty good. It's a long song. It's kind of a longy boy, 6.5 minutes. And, I always feel like this is like, maybe, there's no real soft underbelly, but it's, it was a single. And, you know, it's, what do I always say? It's solid. It's slightly above average. I don't think it's great, but it's very good.
I'm going to disagree about no soft underbelly. The whole record is the soft underbelly. Just because Keep Yourself Alive comes out so strong. And if I'm doing this, if this is my record, I drop that on the last, that's the last track. I mean, single, yeah. You know, single, yeah. But it's too good. This song, you know, solid, not spectacular. And that honestly is most of this record. This record, if Keep Yourself Alive isn't on here, Keep Yourself Alive is the buoy that makes this special. Not that the rest of it's not special, but with all of these proggy, weirdo, you know, Alan Parsons Project is now around, and, you know, you've got Yes, you've got Kansas, you've got all these guys doing this weird crap all the time, lacking the pop sensibility of this record and everything Queen does going forward. And that's what makes Queen so successful, is their pop sensibility. They are able to do this very grandiose music without it being 9.5 minutes, Jim Steinman and Meatloaf.
There is a
place in three ain't been.
That's 2 years from now. That's not that far off.
Four years. Four.
No. I don't know.
Not that far.
Okay. I think there's this thing where they're definitely trying to be different. And so here's the thing we didn't talk about. The producers of this record are John Anthony, who is best known for producing the early Peter Gabriel Genesis records. He produced the band Lindisfarne, kind of a cult band in the UK. All these bands that are like a very, you know, pretentious, artsy-fartsy, progressive rock bands. So this is, they picked, and Roy Thomas Baker, who ends up becoming the sole producer of Future Queen records along with the band. And the guy.
Look at his picture if you don't want to see pretentious crap.
His picture is shocking. He cuts a shocking visage. But they were going for that. They're going for this vibe of these kind of, you know, fanciful.
This is like Def Leppard doing grunge.
Fair enough.
They just couldn't do it. They're going for Prague.
I forgot.
But they're not Prague.
Did we already do The Night Comes Down, or is that next?
That's
I
already, next.
I totally rabbited brain-wise. The Night Comes Down is next, written only by Brian. It's pretty good. I would say I like it more than Liar. Most people probably like Liar more because it's a song that's heard more. It's pretty good. I like it. It's like very rockin' and very fanciful. Again, like one of those Yes songs I mentioned earlier.
Yeah, not a bad song. No notes.
This is a real surpriser. Here's Roger Taylor with his first official frontman. Again, this guy could be a lead singer. He's the best thing about modern times rock and roll, the next track. And his voice is incredible.
How many drummers at this time sing?
I can't think of many. Levon Helm? I don't know.
Peter Criss?
Yeah, Peter Criss and Levon Helm. We are a year before Kiss's debut, though, right here, aren't we?
That is true. 1974. So. Kiss exists as Kiss at this point.
They do exist at this. They are signed and they're working on a record at this point. What else? The next song is actually my second favorite song on the record. Believe it or not. Son and Daughter. You said that Great Rat King sounded like Black Sabbath or metal. You said it sounded like metal. I think Son and Daughter sounds like Lord of This World and Zeppelin No Quarter. Like, it's heavy. It's not a great, like, meaningful song, but it's hard, bro. It's so hard.
One of the things about this album is you have a handful of really good fully formed songs, and then you've got a bunch of really good ideas that are fun to listen to. Which one is this?
Yeah, this is probably in the second category. I will tell you that there's like a part where the riff is very riffy and then it's kind of stops for a second. And in my brain, my lizard pea brain, I keep wanting to hear 21st Century Sunday, because that's what it sounds like, just faster. Sounds like that song. I'm sorry.
I actually just got that record. I just got Master Reality. I've got a 1971 Terre Haute pressing.
I was doing King Crimson, but that's fine. I know.
What you're saying. I'm sorry. It sounded like up under the night sky so fast. Na-na-na-na-na-na-na atmosphere. I don't know the words. Nobody knows the words.
Into the Void is the song you're referencing.
Yeah, but nobody knows the words to it.
Not
I don't think Ozzy knows them.
Geezer, maybe. So here's the next to last song on the record. I don't like Jesus. Freddie Mercury tells the story of Jesus of Nazareth. I don't need this. It's a good song. It's not a terrible song. I just don't need rock bands. I love, Jesus Christ Superstar? We love that.
No.
We love it though. You vinyl checked it.
No, I didn't.
You did. I swear
no,
you
I didn't.
Did. You didn't.
I
you
swear I did
it?
Not.
I went I to see it on Broadway here in San Francisco.
I saw it at the Box last year. Okay. Which was one of the most amazing stagings of a Broadway show I've ever seen. It was played like a concert. I don't know if that's how it's always staged, but it was great. It was great.
With a live band.
Oh yeah.
So Jesus, I don't need this song. How about you?
If your name is not Johnny Cash, I don't need you to sing about Jesus.
Fair enough.
Because Johnny Cash puts it in a way that scares me.
Mahalia Jackson, Sissy Houston, there are people who could sing about, you know, Jesus in a good way, but like,
no, and that's fine. But you know what? My personal taste skews to, I want to hear a song about how you murdered a dude and then turn to Jesus.
It does have a very
That's Johnny Cash.
Johnny Cash. It does have Jesus. Does have like a very rockin' end. So I don't know. Maybe they were Andrew Lloyd Webber fans. And then for the surprising closing track of the record, this is either a stroke of genius or I'm not sure why they did it. But so they had been writing Seven Seas of Rye, which ends up the full version is on Queen 2. And they only have about 2 minutes of it written and recorded. And they tack it on at the end of the album, like a musical cue. And only Freddie knows that this is based on something from his personal life. And it relates to other songs on the record. But, like, it's cool. It's cool sounding. Like, you hear, like, it's like all the way up to the very first singing harmonized guitar line of the song. And then it's over. 1:15. This is either a brilliant genius move to put this on here, knowing it would be the first song on the next record, or the first hit of the next record, the first single. Or it's like, we ran out of ideas and we just put half an idea on the thing.
It's not that they ran out of ideas, they ran out of money.
They did.
Sorry, boys. Time's up. You had 40 hours of recording time. That's 40.
You're getting very loud there. Dial it back a second here, Haas.
What are you, my wife now? Well,
you start to echo when you get loud in the mic.
So okay, let me get the microphone closer so I don't get the echo.
No, the closer is not the problem. I think you're getting louder.
No, closer. The closer is the problem because
you don't keep moving the mic. You change your voice.
Okay, Dad.
Talk to Omar. Omar, cut this. So Queen won, right? Queen won for what it is. Their first take at anything. It's a better debut, right? I mean, it's not Zeppelin 1. No. It's not Deep Purple's couple of first records.
No, Deep Purple's fifth record. You can't count those first three.
It's solid, though.
You know, one of the things about this album is this album has everything you love about Queen. Any Queen fan, anyway. But it also has, for people like me who are not huge Queen fans, it has everything that we love about other bands that we wish Brian May would have kept doing. Brian May is on this record, and it's probably going to be the last time I say this on any Queen record. Brian May is my favorite part of this album. He's always been an amazingly tasteful player, except on this record. On this record, he's not quite tasteful. He is, you know, Axl Rose on the 30-foot ego ramp, you know, putting his junk out in the crowd while he's playing his solos and probably, you know, like doing some yoga poses while he does it. And that's the Brian May I love. That's every guitar player that I have. I love the guitar players that just go stupid and just go, this is my 30 seconds, you shut up and you should let me have it. Going forward, he becomes far more in service to the song. We get less riffy. We get more of the piano motif from Freddie. Apparently, he learns to play the piano. This record is very innocent. And it's a fun, fun record to listen to.
And unlike future Queen records, it does not take itself too seriously yet. They wanted to, but they couldn't. And so
I don't think they could take themselves seriously at this point.
Yeah, not yet. But I do think, like, the building blocks are here. Keep Yourself Alive. Seven Seas of Rye makes, like I said, that little appearance. I love Son and Daughter. Go back. If you have one track on here to go listen to you've never heard before, I guarantee you it's Son and Daughter. And go listen to that riff and tell me it's not almost a Sabbath song. And I don't really have much more to add. I feel like Keep Yourself Alive wasn't quite a hit. Because obviously the next record has Seven Seas of Rye, which becomes a huge hit for them. So I think that Keep Yourself Alive is such a strong song that it stayed with people long after it was off the radio. And then I think on like Queen's Greatest Hits, when you hear bands, when they did it live, it was astounding. Because also, to remind fans, I saw the Queen Rock Montreal earlier this year in the movie theaters, because now they remastered the movie, and they're putting out a remastered version of the vinyl. Maybe right after Record Store Day, not quite for Record Store Day, but they did that song. It's like one of the first songs in the set, and it's amazing. And that was 1980. Still, like 7 years later, still doing it.
This album is very naive. Very much. We're in Disneyland. We're in Mark Hamill, Harrison Ford running down the Death Star screaming, we're in Star Wars, we're in Star Wars, we're in Star Wars. And that's what makes it great. It's different. It's different enough to be fresh, and it's familiar enough to hug. I would give this record as a Queen record, 7 out of 10. As a debut record, 9 out of 10.
Yeah, I think 7 is about right. There are some squiffy tracks on here that are not outstanding. I do want to tell you that the most played songs in the Queen live repertoire. Now I'm Here with 691. Bohemian Rhapsody 678, probably because it's so long. We Will Rock You 650. Keep Yourself Alive 560. And no, unfortunately, because Freddie loved doing this every show, Jailhouse Rock 491. But it was right. But anyway, with that, I have nothing else to add. Shall I take us home?
I'm done. Take us home, baby.
You have been listening to the Glacially Musical Podcast. I am your co-host, Ghost Cult Keefe of GhostCultMag.com. Find me on all the socials at GhostCultMag, at GhostCultKeefe. You can follow us for metal news, tours, and everything. I do a live stream every week. You know the deal. We've been giving away prizes. We gave away a pair of Slayer tickets to Riot Fest for their comeback. And we do all the fine things on all the social things. You know your host, Nick Aloysius Cameron the Turd, is not related to Sosipius Suleimanagic Jackson, but he's incredible, nonetheless, with his elephantine Nutsack and Junk. And he, you can find him most places at Glacially Musical, sometimes at Nick_No_C on the Twitter, formerly known as Twitter, now X. And, you know, Vinyl Nerdism, porn, other fun things. Nick's tweets are, and other socials like Blue Sky and Threads are funny and fun and a little slice of Nick life, Midwestern social graces and things like that.
Midwest Coastal Elitism.
Midwest Coastal Elitism with a just a rando put on a hat in the middle of the episode. But anyway, you have been listening to the Glacially Musical podcast that doesn't play in Peoria, but Queen used to and still does with Adam Lambert.
And keep yourself alive.
Keep yourself alive. That's right. Peace out.